ॐ असतो मा सद्गमय तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय मृत्योर्मा अमृतंगमय ॐ शान्ति 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 लॉर्ड लीड अस फ्रॉम द अनरियल टू द रियल लीड अस फ्रॉम इग्नोरेंस टू इल्यूमिनेशन Lead us from death to immortality. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. So the subject, how to stop worrying and start living, it's very practical. In fact, how is it connected with our Gita? Any negative style of living, and worrying is one of the most destructive and completely unfruitful style of living is because of only one reason, and that reason is wrong understanding about life, misunderstanding, delusion about life. Arjuna really started to worry. What was the cause? Inability to discriminate between what is right, what is wrong. Now the point we have to understand is, even though Arjuna thought that I will stop this, I will not fight, I will not kill these people, the world will not stop moving as it has been moving inexorably. Whether you want to worry about that or want to be free from worry, the world has its own way of going. Nobody can stop. So even after Sri Krishna had helped Arjuna to dispel his delusion, it did not stop the war, it did not stop the killing. He never said that if you stop worrying, then the world become a better place or a worse place. He didn't say the negative things in life will disappear, never. Life will go on, but each one of us have a choice how to understand life and how to have a right outlook on life so that the stress can be reduced. Arjuna had followed his advice and he reaped the benefit. We are all Arjunas. Sri Krishna did not teach to one single individual at that time. Each one who has to face life, and each one of us have to face life heroically like Arjuna, not namby-pamby way. So he is an Arjuna. Arjuna is simply a symbol of a sincere person struggling in life, how to adopt a right attitude towards life, so that he can also cope with life, not only merely coping with life, but he can advance in life towards an inexorable, inevitable goal. That's what Swami Vivekananda had also said. That's what Sri Ramakrishna also had said. So we will deal with this. You know, when a patient goes to a doctor, there are three processes that take place. First, diagnosis of the disease. Then, right prescription. What is the last one? The patient has to follow the prescription correctly. So, no doctor can remove the disease of a patient just by merely diagnosing or prescribing. The onus lies on the patient, and we are all patients. Who are the patients? Excepting Jivan Muktas, liberated in life. All of us are patients, small way or big way. So before I start the subject, I have to bring a beautiful anecdote. Buddha, enlightened, got enlightenment, and it was said for 14 days he had gone round the Bodhi tree dancing in ecstasy. Then he decided to give up his body. Because he thought, who is there who would like to have my teaching? Then the legend says, Brahma appeared to him and requested him, please give your teaching. Then Brahma explained to him, in this world there are three sorts of people. The enlightened people, the God-realized souls, they don't need your teaching. There are quite a number of people who don't want your teaching. But in between, there are few people who want to get enlightenment and do not know the way. For them, your teaching will be most helpful. And Buddha accepted. And then it is said he attained illumination at the age of 45, and for the next 45 years, until he was ripe old, 90 years old, he went on preaching his experience, the most excellent dharma. And you know what is most curious about his teaching? He never talked about God. He never denied God, mind you. He never talked about God. He said, be practical, be good, do good. For most of the people, that is his prescription. But those who want to go further, for them he had that other ways for enlightenment. He had not come merely to make people be good and do good. But for most of the people, that's what is needed. And that be good and do good is what is called Abhyudaya in Vedantic language. But for those few people who want to go beyond be and do good, which is called Nishreyas, liberation, for them he taught deeper truths like meditation, etc. Now, the point of this anecdote is, in this world, there are three sorts of people. The enlightened people, the rational people, the wise people, they don't worry. Then there are worldly people, whom we devotees proudly look down to distinguish ourselves from them. They are called worldly people. Fortunately or unfortunately, they don't worry. Because they are worldly people. They say this is our life. If somebody dies, okay, we grieve for short time, 1 hour, 2 hours, 1 day, 2 days at best. And if he has lot of property and doesn't live, but the worry will last a little longer time. But they will not worry because they are eager to enjoy the world. Do you see the point? They don't care. But in between is Trishankus. Na garka, na ghatka. Neither purely worldly, nor purely wise. In between hangers, worry a lot. All the devotees worry a lot. It is for them this talk is meant. And before we start, another point. There are so many psychologists who try to help people to lessen the worry, not get rid of the worry. But certainly their effect is minimal. You know why the minimal? Unless a person has a higher outlook, worry cannot be overcome. To give you an example, Jung had written a book later on, and I think it is In Search, Modern Man, In Search of a Soul. I'm not 100% sure, either that book or some reminiscences. Most likely that book. So there he said, looking back at a later time of his life, he said, most of my patients, many of my patients, they came to me for help and I couldn't help them. So they had to be sent back home. After many years, I felt a curiosity, I'm putting my words, not the exact words, the essence. I felt a curiosity to find out what happened to them, because even I couldn't help them. So he went and found them, that many out of them had been very successful in life, very happy in life. Successful not in the sense of achieving something, successful in the sense they were very contented, happy people. Then Jung interviewed them, when I could not help, how did you deal with this problem? Invariably there was one answer. What was the answer? They said that we did not remove the worry, but when we raised our mind to a higher level, looked at from the higher point of view, the worries etc. appeared to be very trivial, and then they did not trouble us any longer. Like, you know, for a child, when a doll is broken, it is the child's heart breaks. But when the same child grows up, if the doll is not already broken, he is likely to break it and throw it in the dustbin. See, we have to grow. That was Jung's conclusion. Unless we raise our mind to a higher level, this ordinary worrying and other things cannot be overcome at all. This is the simple truth. That means only a spiritual outlook can help us overcome the problems of life, modern or ancient. No other way. Another point in this regard, before I really start, is there is a misconception that in this world it is possible to live without sorrow. In this world it is possible to live without any sorrow. Some sorrow you want to enter and have no sorrow. How is it possible? No, samsara, some sorrow. You enter into some sorrow and not expect any sorrow. That is not possible. There will always be some. Nobody can overcome. Even Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwara. This is saying, Panchabhuter Phande Pude Brahma Kande. Caught in the net of five elements, even Brahman weeps. Rama wept. Krishna had to flee from Mathura. He decamped. Yeah, modern times, what? He couldn't cope any longer. Simply he packed bag and baggage with his people, shifted residence from long to a long distance. Yeah, that is why even God, if he incarnates, he can't escape. See, Ramakrishna had to suffer from cancer. Holy Mother had to walk so much and face so many problems. Swami Vivekananda had to face so many problems. Show me one man who lived happily without any problems. The only person who can live in this world without any problem is a dead man. The simple truth. Okay, with this background, let us first have an anatomy of worry. There is a diagnosis. So here are some points. What is it? Anatomy. First of all, definition of worry. What is worry? Worry is a negative mental reaction to certain experiences in life. What is worry? Negative mental reaction to certain events in life. So the events in life cannot be prevented. There are people under the same circumstances, they look at the same events in a most wonderful way. Just to give an example, this is an anecdote from a real life. A Sufi saint was given a precious necklace by some admirer. Then at night, you know, in the daytime he was given, at night a thief entered and simply he snatched this and he was running away. Then the saint said, God bless you, thank you very much. So the thief stopped and said, "Why do you thank me? I am stealing your necklace. Why do you thank me?" He said, "I am worried ever since I got it. But how I am going to keep it? What I am going to do with it? And who is going to steal it?" A real incident. You know, Gopal Erma, Sri Ramakrishna's devotee?
Yes.
Once some American devotees visited her. She was living in a very poor house. Practically there were no amenities and there was no mosquito net. They thought the best gift we can give it to her is a new, brand new mosquito net. And they left after giving that. Next morning, she came running to Baranagar Mat with the mosquito net bundled under her armpit. She was haggard. Then she gets, "Here is your mosquito net. I don't want." They said, why are you returning? She said, "Whole night I was worried where mice will come and eat it up." Without mosquito net, I was very happy. Of course, she was much better than another man who purchased a brand new mosquito net, tied it up nicely, and he went under his bed and slept. Next morning, somebody found him and said, "What is this? You have a mosquito net and you are sleeping under the cot." He said, "You know, these stupid mosquitoes, they think I am in the mosquito." So, this saint, he thanked him. "I was worried about these things. Now you relieved me of my worry." Now for us, it may look, it's a precious thing. Why was he worried? He could have done some good out of it. But their way of outlook is something different. In fact, if you study the life of Sri Ramakrishna, is the beginning of his pujaryaship started with this incident. You know, when he came to Dakshineswar, Madhur Babu wanted him to give him a job. He said, "I don't want." When his nephew Hriday came, then Hriday asked him, "But why are you not accepting job?" He said, "You know, who is going to worry about the ornaments and protecting them and all that?" Hriday said, "I will take care of all the ornaments. You just do the worship." Then Sri Ramakrishna accepted it. He didn't want to worry about it. Yeah, that is how his priesthood has started, leading ultimately to the ultimate realizations and all that. So the point is that in this world, certain events happen. Whether they are positive or negative, you cannot say that it is a positive event or negative event. It depends upon how we look upon it. Yeah, positive event. Swami Premananda, he was a very nice person. He was a student. His father told him, "If you pass high school examination, then I will get you a nice, sweet girl and get you married." He went on praying, "Oh Lord, please make me fail. Make me fail." And God heard him, he failed, and he was very happy. Yeah, because he didn't want to get married. The point is, how do we look upon any event? Any event can be looked in a worldly way, in a spiritual way. What is the difference between a saint and a worldly person? The event is not separate, but the way one interprets that event. This is what we have to understand. So, what is the anatomy of worry? What is the first point we have to understand? This world is another name for worry, troubles. That's why Buddha said life is full of misery. That means there will be some events which are difficult, which are painful. You cannot neglect it. you cannot but take notice of it. But how we can interpret them, that is where spiritual practice comes into our aid. This is what we have to understand. The first, that was the first point. Second point is that we have a wrong understanding about life. That is the cause of worry, anatomy of a worry. What is it? Life should be only full of joy. Somehow we think life should be full of joy. There is nothing wrong with that expectation. What is wrong is, if we think life means the world, the events, the objects should be consisting of only positive things. Everybody smiles, everybody hugs you, everybody loves you. You know what happens? If everybody does like that, you will remain a cockroach. Yeah? Evolution. This is what some evolutionary historian had said. Cockroaches have not evolved in millions of years. Why? They are highly successful in life. Yeah, they can eat carpets, they can eat paper, they can eat wood, they can survive on anything. Because they did not die, they remained there as cockroaches. Yeah. Even cockroaches have their usefulness, you know. One husband was asked, what would you like to be in your next birth? He said, I would like to be a cockroach. He said, cockroach? Why? He said, you know, that my wife doesn't fear anything except in cockroaches. Okay. What is the price of evolution? Death. When an animal dies, then its desire is not dead. And according to Vedanta, death is not end of life. Death is beginning of another life. Therefore, next life, this animal which died because it didn't succeed in getting enough food, etc. And it would, I wish I were like that. Maybe my neck should be a little longer. Maybe my hand should be a little higher so that I can reach food, etc. That desire created the next body. Until, you know, as you know, a small animal like horse-like animal became a giraffe. This Vedanta explains it, that we all have to grow until we reach God. There is no escape. But if there were to be no difficulties, if we are successful means we are getting nice food, no enemies and no nothing, we will remain. Wonderful. Memory is very good. So, life should be full of joy, only joy, no opposite. No scripture ever teaches this. But we can make our life happier life by a different outlook. The change should not come, will never come, cannot come, need not come in the world. It should come within ourselves. The change should come within ourselves. Know that? Yes. There was a Zen master and there was a student running a pizza hut. So he went to the Zen master and learnt Zen. By the way, you know what is Zen? Zen means dhyana. The word dhyana, Sanskrit word dhyana, became chana, chan, and zen when it reached Japan. So this student went, learned zen very well, have been taught very well, and running pizza shop. So one day the teacher felt like eating, have a pizza. He went to the pizza hut, paid $10 and was served the pizza, paid $10 and waiting for the change. But the student wasn't giving any change at all. He was smiling. Then the master asked, what about the change? He said, Master, you taught us. The change must come from within ourselves. That is absolute fact. The change must come from within ourselves. I gave many times the example, the object being there, something is there. But what that something is depends upon our state of consciousness. For a God man, it is nothing but God. That is how we have to understand. So, that life will be, life means world will be only full of joy. It is a counterproductive attitude. You know why? If life is full of joy, you will not know what joy is. If you are not hungry, you can never enjoy food. Have you noticed?
Yes.
If you are not tired, you can't sleep. If you don't pay the opposite, you cannot know experience what is called joy. Always dukkha brings sukha and sukha brings dukkha. This is the nature of life. This is the one of the misnomers. Even worse than that, there is another misnomer. What is that? Each one of us tend to look around us and say, everyone is so happy. Oh Lord, why did you make me alone so miserable? Somehow we feel everybody is very happy, not knowing that's what everybody else is also thinking. Yeah? There are, if you look at people, each one is looking at the other person, thinking, dressing, fashion, style, not knowing that the other person is also looking at us. So, nobody can be perfectly happy in this world excepting two people. According to Swami Vivekananda, a God-realized soul who sees everything as Satchidananda, Sagara. And the idiotic fellow who doesn't have any thinking capacity. These two people are no worry, perfect bliss. That's ignorance is bliss. And bliss is ignorance. In the case of the enlightened people, that they don't know that world is full of suffering. That is called ignorance. That's why they are so blissful. For the other type of people, ignorance is the bliss. Either case, they don't have the problem. It is the problem who are in between. So that is, everybody else, all others are very happy except me now. Everybody has his or her share of worries in this, because it is the same season, same sun, same moon, and same neighbors. Yeah. Fourth misnomer is, sorrows are undesirable. You know, sorrows means events which produce troubles, difficulties are undesirable. No. We can only grow only through sorrows and sufferings. Nobody has ever become great only through happiness. Have you ever thought about it? Sorrows and sufferings are not only not undesirable, they are the most desirable things. Swami Vivekananda said, if you want quickly to go to God, live among people who are always behind you, criticizing, nagging, and not unloving to you. Quickly you will go to God. You have no choice. This is the truth, though we don't like it. So, sorrows are this most wonderful thing. Swami Vivekananda has written a most beautiful poem, Blessed Misery. Have you ever read about it? Have you ever seen that? Poems of Swami Vivekananda. A man bending under the burden of life, wending his way, and then after a long suffering, oh blessed misery, but for you, I would not have reached this day. Read, it's a most wonderful poem he has written. Right. Any failures are, another misnomer is, failures, difficulties, troubles, etc. only prove one's worthlessness. Suppose someone is not successful in getting a job or in getting a promotion. or in succeeding some, whatever it be. So he thinks he is a failure. And what does failure prove? What does failure prove? That the fellow is unworthy. This is a misunderstanding. Failures do not prove our unworthiness. But failure to understand failure as a stepping stone to success proves our unworthiness. We have to learn from our failures. You know the example of Edison. He was trying to find out the filament. 10,000 experiments failed. His lab, not only he, his assistants. So one day they came and said, sir, 10,000 times we failed. Why should we persist in this? Why not we give it up? He smiled and said, is it true? What a wonderful news. Now, my boys, we know 10,000 ways we can't produce a filament. Let us find out a new way. And he did. Swami Vivekananda, once he was moving in Varanasi, Mother Durga's temple, some ferocious monkeys, brute monkeys, started to chase him. He started to run. You remember?
Yes.
A monk was coming that way. He said, you should not run away because they will chase you and finish you. Face the brutes. And he turned and faced really. And immediately all of them fled. Because once they saw that he was there like that, immediately their enemy. This is the simple truth. Failures do not prove our unworthiness or worthiness. What they prove is, they give us a special occasion for us to do something about them. Choice is ours, what we do with them. There is no such thing called failure, especially according to Indian way of thinking. Why? Because there is infinite life. If you fail and you are near death, don't worry. Next life, you can start where you stopped and pursue it. Failures only teach us how to go forward. This is the simple truth. There is nothing called failure. It is an exercise. You know, suppose you are weak, you want to develop your muscles, you go to a gym. At first, he will give you some weight, which may be too difficult. You try to lift, you fail. Is it a failure? Then what do? Next day you go. And after a few days, you are able to lift it. So what is a failure? It is an exercise in the process of attaining success. So our attribute, failures are there to prove my unworthiness. They are not there either to prove worthiness or unworthiness. They are simply opportunities. Yes, that is it. And failures are inevitable. Here Ramakrishna has his own way of expressing this truth. What is that? Say, if anyone of you remember?
Pas-pash.
He says, when a calf is born, it tries to get up. How many times it falls? But after few minutes, not only it stands up, it also runs. Don't you see children? How many times they fall down? Does it prove that the child is unworthy of getting up and walking? Does it prove? He's a child, he's trying, he will try again. And then after a few days, he will not only get up, now he will make you also run. Before he runs, you are running to protect some your precious cups and objects and all those things. Right?
Yes.
Now, with this background, so what are the important points we are deriving? Worries are inevitable. They are merely occasions. And everybody, life is samsara without any difficulty or sorrow, is no world at all. And everyone has to pass through this school. There is no way. This is it. Swamiji sometimes compared this world to three things he compared. Sometimes to a school, sometimes to a gym, and sometimes, most of the time, he said, it's a circus. We are all buffoons playing the part. And one of the characteristics of a mature personality is humor. You know what is humor? The ability to laugh at oneself. If only we know how to laugh at ourselves, we never lack entertainment in our life. Not my saying, it is some great man's saying. I am merely repeating it. So with this, events will be there. So how to look at them in such a way that they won't produce worry, but rather help us to gain what are to get, what we really are created to get. And according to Vedanta, what is the only goal of life? God realization. But put it that way, many people do not agree. But put it in a common sensical way, as I put it.
Happiness.
Goodness,
wisdom,
and happiness. Who doesn't want? People want to live. They want to remain for a long, infinite time. Immortality. They want to be wise so that they know everything. Once I was giving a talk, everybody wants to know. Infinite quest for knowledge. One fellow got up and said, no, I don't want to know anything. So he simply said, two things I want. Don't you want to know how the stock market will be tomorrow morning? And don't you want to know what your wife is thinking about you? He said, yes. You see, we all want to know, but we sometimes don't want to put forth any effort for a reason. Maybe our time is limited, maybe our energy is limited, maybe our intelligence is limited. But given the desire is there, who doesn't want to be, every time you are watching a cricket, what is going on in your mind? Stupid fellow, if only I had been there. Every strike will be
six
over the boundary. Whenever you watch this chess champions playing, you know, you could see the clearly what can be bring the checkmate. So if you are playing football, you will be in the prime most. It is all fantasy. But we all have that fantasy, is it not?
Yeah.
In a simple psychology, when you are watching a movie, a hero and a heroine. If you are a man, with whom do you identify? And if you are a woman, you identify. And then, mourning about, look at the husband. Vice versa. You know, this is how trouble starts. Cinema is all right. Real life. It is, that's why they never show real life. Always the cinema ends married, happy afterwards, closed. That is, they don't show. If they show that, nobody will go.
I'm already.
Migathadi, Vendi Therapai Chudandi. A trailer they give in Telugu cinemas. Happily they are married. The rest, you watch on the silver screen. Okay. What is the point we are making? Everybody wants infinite life, infinite happiness, infinite wisdom. This is the simple truth. That is called God. Nobody, even atheists, cannot deny it. They may not accept the word God, but the idea of God is accepted. Acceptable. There is no choice. This is in joke, you know. There was a fellow who was deceased. He was not deceased, not dead. Deceased. Then, you know, doctor came and told him, "You have 5 minutes to live. Any last wishes?" He gathered all his strength, said, "Doctor, if you don't mind, I want to have a second opinion." That is innate, inbuilt within us. Nobody wants to die. If anybody wants to die, that's because he thinks he can't escape suffering. But given that we can escape suffering, nobody wants to die. Okay. So what is the goal? Ultimate goal is God realization. And we are all inexorably going towards it, pushed by nature. This is called evolution. Until human birth, it goes on in an unconscious process or instinctive process. With human birth, it is supposed to go through reason, rationality. We stop, we think, we set particular goals, and we also set a particular path. Consciously, we make efforts to progress. That is called instinct to reason, reason to intuition. This is the inevitable steps of progress. Okay. So, when we want that to go, we have to go through so many steps, we should never forget. That's why Hindus divide life into, first Hindus say there are four goals in life. What is that? Dharma, Artha, Kama and Moksha. It's a most rational interpretation of what life should be about. Dharma means what? Learn what is right, what is wrong. That is the first stage of life, a student's life. What is good, what is bad, what is right, what is wrong. That should be learned thoroughly. What is the next stage of life? Grihastashrama life. What is one supposed to do? Two things, Artha and Kama. That is, you earn in the righteous way, make the instruments ready. It is a different subject, I won't go into it, because by instruments, what does it mean? Artha means, what does it mean? Artha, we all use the word Artha. Artha means, you know, money. Artham anartham bhavaya nityam. That is to say, you know, one merchant was travelling in a train, and a young man happened to be sitting opposite to him. They fell to talking, and the merchant was waxing eloquent. Life is all about giving and taking. The young man said, "Would you elaborate a little?" He said, "Yes, you give, I take." So, artha means, is the immediate meaning is that you have money, wealth. Wealth means what? You have a house and you have money, you have a job and all these things. But there is more meaning. Artha means instrument, proper instrument for the enjoyment of what we would like to enjoy. It's not enough to have money, nobody eats money. And supposing you have a wonderful house, but you are insomniac. What is the good, whether you sleep in a hut or whether you sleep in a palace? What is the good of your rich house with all furnishing? In fact, your worry is more. Having such a good house, everybody else is, even your servants are enjoying. Yeah, you know, sometimes good masters are there. They ask their servants also to eat on the same table, though at a distance. This fellow is suffering from dyspepsia. All wonderful dishes are there. His own money. The servants are wholeheartedly eating. This fellow is unable to eat. You see the point? The point is, instruments must be proper. So, there are three instruments. That is called artha. Artha means three instruments. What is it? The instrument which we want to enjoy within proper environment. For example, if you want to eat a sweet meat, it should be a good sweet meat. Even if not the best, it should be reasonably good sweet. And it should be in the right environment. You understand? You can't eat it in a mosquito infested area or where your neighbors are looking, glaring at you. Yeah. It should be in a place which would not disturb, right? Then that is fine. But the body which wants to eat it must be in a healthy condition. Then the mind also must be in a worry-free condition. Suppose the mind is going on worrying. My favorite example is, you want to eat rasagullas. You bought the rasagullas and you kept it in your own dining room and you are about to eat it, and enters a terrorist with a gun, puts it on your back, and what does he say? Eat rasagulla. He is not telling you, preventing you. He says, if you don't eat, I will shoot you. Will it give any happiness? No. Why? Because you are forced. Whatever we are forced to do, that is unhappiness. Voluntarily, freely we have to do. So the mind must be also free from worry. These three things. The object must be good, in good, right environment. The body should be fit condition. The mind should be free from worries. All these things, and other things are also there, which I won't elaborate too much. For example, you can't eat at 2 o'clock in the morning. You can't, it must be at the right place, at the right time, and so many factors are involved there. So all those things fall under the category of what? Artha. That is the goal which we learn in the householder's life. Then, what is the next?
Kama.
What is the meaning of kama? You know, among Hindus, certain words gain certain type of misunderstanding. Kama means lust. Lust means the attraction felt, sexual attraction. That is not the only. Kama means what? Here, in this here, enjoyment. Kama means enjoyment. Anything. You want to eat, enjoy food? You want to put a nice dress? That's enjoyment. You want to entertain, want to go on a picnic, boating? Anything that contributes to your happiness is enjoyment. Then what is, why Hinduism specially says, every one of us want to enjoy. Why should there be any injunction, you enjoy, as though if the scriptures, we are such great devotees of scriptures, we are enjoying because the scripture asked me to enjoy. What is the scripture telling? Indiscriminate enjoyment doesn't lead to real happiness. It leads to consequences which bring terrible unhappiness later on, sooner or later. So anything you want to enjoy, it must be in the right way. It must be in the right quantity, at the right place. With regard to this injunction about, you know, dana, in Bhagavad Gita, one of the Adesha Kale Yaddanam Apatre Bhyasya Diyate Asatkrutam. That is, a gift given to a wrong person at the wrong time with a wrong attitude, Tat Tamasamit Yudahritam. It is considered as Tamasik Dana. It must be given to the right. A rich man is giving something to a poor man. And because the poor man asked you at 12 o'clock noon, and you go at 12 o'clock night and wake him up and say, look here, I have brought food. I remember an incident, you know, that there was a hospital. It's a real story also, but I put it in a different way. That there was a patient, and the patient's trouble is unable to sleep. So the nurse was instructed that if you find that is the patient like this, so you go and give this medicine so that the patient could sleep at this time. Doctor instructed. So the nurse went there, found the patient fast asleep, shook him up because timely medicine has to be given. Here is your sleeping medicine.
Mm.
Adeshe kale yadhanam apatre bhishti. The idea is, if you find him sleepless, give him the medicine. Or, funny story, just to keep you awake, you know, there was a rich man, and he was in a village, he was growing pumpkins. So one poor thief entered and stole one pumpkin. Unfortunately, this man was keeping an eye and he was caught. And he caught hold of the thief, took him to his house along with the pumpkin and said, "Poor man, you wanted to eat pumpkin, isn't it? Please eat it. Eat the whole lot. I will beat you up." Is that called eating a pumpkin? It's very Indian pumpkin. So, there is a right way of enjoyment, there is a wrong way of enjoyment. According to Sri Ramakrishna, according to Gita, according to scripture, what is the right way? It should be suitable to you and it should be enjoyed at the right time with the right attitude. What is the right attitude? First you offer it to God. If you are a devotee, offer it to God. That's why Christians have the habit of saying the grace. Oh Lord, we thank you. And we also devotees, before we eat anything, we say Brahmarpana. Offer it to God. There may be defects. It will be covered up by this. Beautiful. And in the right balance, if you overeat, then it will be terrible. Yes, we see, we are experts in inventing reasons why we eat. As I was telling to some of us, there is a devotee in Houston and he is diabetic. His wife doesn't allow him to eat sweets. He shouts, he says, "Swamiji, you come to my house." Because whenever I go, and she prepares best sweets. And he starts eating. His wife starts shouting. He replies, "Why are you mad at me? You see, I am doing so much good. You are eating sweets." "No, I am not eating. I am eating prasadam." First reason. Second reason is, he says, what did Sri Ramakrishna say? He will eat through the devotees' mouths. If I don't eat, you are starving Sri Ramakrishna. Third reason, he says, even more cogent, that if I don't eat, how are the doctors, poor doctors, going to survive? Doctors, pharmacists and all those people have to survive. Even the undertakers also have to survive. You know, we invent lot of excuses. Think, Vedanta is not there to prevent us from enjoying life, but proper dharmic way of enjoying life. Offer it to God. Thank God that it is coming. Where did it say? In Bhagavad Gita, it says that Tai dattanai bhyo bhungte stena eva saha. He is a thief who doesn't offer to gods what they have kindly granted us and eats for oneself. You remember? Stena eva saha. Yajna sishtasina. Only what remains of yajna. What is yajna? You offer it to God. The prasadam is called yajna sishta. That is the dharmic way of enjoying anything. That's why Hindu way of life, everything you offer to God. New dress for God. Marriage, you worship God. And they take 7 steps, O Lord, that please bless us with those. That I don't know how many of you have ever been given those 7 vows, 7 steps. Have you ever been given? If you know what the meaning is, you will be astonished. The first thing that comes and strikes you is, life is for God. We bring up the children for God. We are traveling co-pilgrims towards God. Let us help each other progress towards God. At each step, that is the meaning that comes. But because, you know, we are not told, and the priests also don't want to tell all those things. They do just rituals and then it goes. It's a wonderful thing. Christian wedding. He said marriage is made in heaven. That was their belief. For what purpose? It is to help each other to go towards God. This is the simple fact. Every religion has its own words. When Sister Nivedita repeated these things to Holy Mother, you know, she appreciated and said, "Dharmi kotha, dharmi kotha." These are dharmic teachings, dharmic words. And unfortunately, many people don't follow. But what is meant, what is the point I am making? Anything that we have to enjoy, the Vedanta teach, Vedic teach, do not say, do not enjoy. You say, enjoy. If you don't enjoy, you are doing something wrong. You are going against God's will. But the acquiring the prosperity or instruments is a dharmic way, and enjoying also is a dharmic way. That is called, comes under the broad category of kama. Only when we pass through these three stages, then comes before pre-university course. What is it? Upasana. Vanaprasthashrama is meant for upasana. Then comes finally, ultimately, sannyasa. Sannyasa corresponds to which value? Moksha, liberation. How wonderful. And the Vedas are also divided into four. You know what it is? First, Rigveda. Rigveda has got, what does it tell you? The prayers, the aspirations. Then comes Brahmana, mantra, Samhita, Brahmana. Brahmana, how to perform rituals so that we slowly become purified. Then comes Upasana Kanda. Finally comes Upanishads. Is one way of dividing the Vedas, mantra, Brahmana, Upasana and Jnana. This is the logical way we have to develop. So that is what we have to understand, that we have a final goal which is moksha, but our proximate goal is to go through these steps by the teachings of the scriptures. That is why Shankaracharya's that beautiful instructions are there. What is Vedo Nityam Adhiyatam? Scriptures should be studied regularly. And what is our scripture?
Gospel.
And what is the teaching of the Ramakrishna? Five commandments. Wonderful. Okay. So there must be a definite goal in life. A person who has no goal, he will go on worrying. If you have a goal, even if it is a goal, I will grow some beautiful flowers, I will learn a new song, or I will read a new book. You must look forward with joy to making your life. Life will not make you joyful. You will have to make life, it gives opportunity, but we have to make our own life better. Otherwise, we will make it worse. This is one way how to deal with worries. But the first thing is, what did I say? Nobody can be free from worries. Life is full of sorrows, sufferings. But we should not develop a negative mental attitude. Okay. What is the next thing I said? The final goal of life is God realization. So what has that got to do with our how to stop worrying? Because all these worries, finally, they will go only when we realize God. Where is it said? Vidyate hridaya grandhi chidyante sarva samshaya kshiyante cha asya karmani tasmin drishte paravare. So if we keep, every one of us is going to God, I am also going to God, but all other goals are small steps towards that goal, then we are far less likely to worry. Right. Not only that, in that light, these worries do not seem to be so glaring. Then, it is wonderful to study two things. I especially recommend it. Study history. The first thing I ask you to do is study history. What is the benefit? If you study history, you find, if you find the whole history is nothing but a gory story of man's inhumanity to humanity. Will Durant, an American author, the story of civilization, he says, if you look for God in history, you will not find Him. Because the if there is a God, such things do not happen. Even today, we are not any wiser. Two World Wars, Second World War. How many people died? More than 100 million people died. And how many millions are worried? God alone knows, right? So when we study history, we become compared to those troubles. What are these troubles? Our troubles, petty things. Even today, see, the people in Rwanda or in other countries under Saddam Hussein or under Afghanistan, etc., etc., compared to their problems, what is your problem? We never compare. History gives us that insight. Then, what is the second? I said two things you must study. I recommend. What is it? First?
History.
Then, second, study the lives of great people. Show me one man who has been free from worries. Oh, wonderful, happy, carefree life, and he became great. Will you find one single example? You will not find. All of us have our own worries. The thing is, we think our worries are not at all, you know, others' worries should never be compared to our worries. They are all small. There was a village and only Jews lived there. There was a rabbi, there was a synagogue. So one day, people used to complain to the rabbi, oh, so much worry. So one day the rabbi said, do one thing, next Saturday, all of you bundle your worries and bring it. We will leave it in one room after the prayer service is over, and then you go and choose what worries, which bundle you want to accept. So next Saturday they all came. Everybody put their bundle, small bundle, big bundle, everything. Yes. After the service was over, and they all rushed, first come, first served, you see. And then they took somebody else's worries. Next day they came, Rabbi, Rabbi, what is the matter? Please give back our old bundles. These are new bundles, even though appear to be small. Oh my God, unbearable. Then next Saturday, everybody took back their, ever afterwards happy. After that experience. Yeah. You know, that is true. You think other people's worries are less. So if you live in their shoes, step into their shoes, then you will find that your shoes pinch far less than their shoes. This is the fact. So study the lives of saints, including Sri Ramakrishna, Holy Mother. Did they not have problems? Did they not suffer in life? And yet in one sense, they did not suffer. Why? Because of their attitude on life. And also they have a higher experience. Okay. One of the greatest remedies for worrying, hard physical labor. Go on digging a useless field, rocky field. And then when you come back, you are so tired that you have no time to worry at all. You know this Dale Carnegie's famous book, How to Stop Worrying and Start Living? There was an incident. There was a couple, and they were in practically good condition. The husband was earning, and they had 5-6 children. Suddenly the husband died. And the woman was not very literate. She did not know. But what to do? After the funeral ceremony was over, then she had to find a hard job. He said, she was doing that work. So a journalist went to interview and said, are you not worried? He said, I simply don't have time to worry. Early morning, I get up, go on washing my children's clothes, preparing breakfast, taking them to school, and then I rush to the job, and again come back, bring back the children, look after them, feed them, put them to bed, and then by the time my head touches the pillow, I am totally out. It is true. If we do hard physical labor, that is a great aid in getting rid of worries. There is something also to be said. When sweat comes out, the sweat also removes some amount of worries. This is the truth. If you want to experiment and see, then you will understand. And breathing fresh air while walking, running, etc., that also you cannot be breathing fresh air and then thinking this is stale worries. Worry means stale, like a broken gramophone record, going over and over the same things. So it helps. If it is an enjoyable physical labor, that's much better. You know, either gardening or whatever it is. Okay. One of the things is, Ramakrishna used to say, too much activity, and nowadays it seems to be either way forced or a person becomes habituated, they become workaholics. More activity, more worries. More activity, more worries. Some people are helpless. They have to work because they have to live life. Unfortunate, but that is what life is. But there are many who do not need. And if they go on, if there is activity, there is relationship. If there is relationship, wherever there is a relative, there is a will. Wherever there is another person, some kind of Christian thing. Who loves whom in this world? We think that everybody loves us. And we learn, nobody loves us. Everybody loves himself or herself. This is the hard truth. See Ramakrishna's story? He told one guru told his disciple, come away with me. You know, my mother loves me. My wife loves me. Remember? No? Then he said, I'll give you a medicine and you take it early in the morning. And you look like half dead. You'll be watching everything. But you'll look like dead to others. And then the guru entered, what is the matter? Oh, our husband died, our son died. Okay. So there is a way out. He can come to life. Yes. How? I will give you a medicine to one of you. But you will die. But he will come back to life. Immediately they started seeking. Oh, old woman said, my daughter-in-law is new. She doesn't know how to bring up my grandchildren. Without me, they won't see the light of the stars. The wife said, so jo aa gaya so chala gaya. What Vedanta? He was come, he has gone. Aya ram gaya ram. Why worry about it so much? Why should I die for a person who died? Then the disciple got and became a monk. Now the idea is, it's wrong to think anyone loves us. In this world, every one of us love only one thing. Primarily. What is it? Happiness. Primarily we love only happiness. Secondarily, what is it we love? The instrument through which that happiness can come to us. This is the simple truth. Husband, wife, these are all instruments. Suppose husband doesn't give happiness. Yes? What do you think the wife does? She cannot tolerate. Maybe she can put up for a few days, but afterwards she will wish he is dead. Suppose wife doesn't give happiness. He will do the same thing. This is this stark truth. That is why in the Brihadaranyaka, this Atman is dearer than the son, dearer than the wife, dearer than everything else in this world, dearer than even this body, dearer than even this mind. Beautiful exposition of Shankara Bhasha is there. It is true. Man doesn't love anybody. Man loves primarily only one thing. What is it?
Happiness.
But secondarily he loves what he thinks is the appropriate object through which he can get that happiness. And so long as that happiness comes. After that, even if the people are there, objects are there, he won't love them. They may be there traditionally, you know. They live like two dead people. That's all. No relationship. There is no happiness. That is the idea. So, what am I talking about? Too much of activities bind people more. So, it is Ramakrishna Swami Vivekananda never advised unnecessary activity. If you study the gospel, you also do whatever is necessary. Then you reduce it. If you reduce it, your responsibility, your worry, the thinking about future results, all these things will come down. Then what shall we do? What does it mean reducing activity? Not sitting like morons. You reduce unnecessary activities and increase fruitful activities. You read, you enjoy music, you develop garden, you enjoy your life in whatever way. You need not even think about God. But you should definitely know how to enjoy. That means outer activity becomes less, inner activity becomes more. Because how long can you depend upon outer activity? Even reading books, Swami Sharadananji was telling, you know, you develop, he used to say to monks, brahmacharis, so you develop doing more japa. You develop also the habit of study. Then he said, supposing you become old, you can't do much, but you can read books. But a time will come when perhaps you won't even be able to read books. But if you know how to do japa, you can lie on the bed, you, in any condition you can think of God. This is the only way out. Otherwise, other things are dependencies. This is positive way of understanding. Negative way of understanding is, you see, work can become all like alcoholism, a way of escape. Workaholism. And if you don't have work, you become restless. Because you have not developed any inner resources. And so you go on doing it. What shall I do? Play cards. What shall I do? Do gardening. What shall I do? Temple management. I'm not saying they are bad. I'm saying if you do them as master, wonderful. If you do them as slaves, because if you are not able to do, then you will feel unhappy. We have a right to become happy. That's all. Japam is a wonderful thing, as I said. Then pranayama can reduce worry. Pranayama, it's very good. Pranayama, at least temporarily, it calms the mind and it also helps us to think clearly and it helps us to reduce our worries. All these things depend upon one important factor. You know what is it? No. There is a principle which is very clearly enunciated in the Bhagavad Gita. Nobody can worry for you. You have to worry for yourself. Nobody can dream for you. You have to dream for yourself. Nobody can eat for you. You have to eat for yourself. That's enunciated in the 6th chapter. What is that? Uddharet Atmana Atmanam Na Atmanam Avasadayet. So what is it? Atmaiva Bandhuhu Atmaiva Ripuhu. Bandhuhu is an Atma. Means one's own mind is one's own greatest friend. Which type of mind? The mind which has been purified and subdued, controlled. That mind becomes one's greatest friend. And an uncontrolled, impure mind becomes one's own greatest enemy. Even from a practical point of view, okay, let us say you have a big problem. Really it is problem. Really it is worrying. How many times do you need to think about it? How many times? Only once you have to recognize it. And then think, what is the best way to come to? What is the point? Tomorrow my boss may fire me. Tomorrow my boss may fire me. Whole night you are thinking about, tossing about. And next day when you go with that face, even the boss who has been reconsidering his decision will reconfirm his decision.
thinking for the solution itself is worry. So isn't it?
You see, thinking solution takes time. We are not wise. What I am saying is, it is better than repeating the same thing. It is better to think what could be the better solution for it. And there are various ways for devotees, especially praying to God, depending upon Him, etc., are wonderful. Okay. What should the devotees do? With this point, keep in mind. Only one can worry, or one can get rid of worry. It all depends upon our own training. Nobody can do it for us. This is the simple truth. Now, one important point for devotees, especially Hindus, there is one wonderful solution. For others, there is another wonderful solution. What is that? Hindus believe in the law of karma. And if you really believe in it, nothing happens by accident. Everything happens as a result of our own karma. I am a 150% believer in that. If I have some people giving me trouble, it is my karma. If some people are making me fed up, that is also my karma. Yeah. What is the point? If we believe in it, that means we are taking responsibility. It's my actions which brought about this result. Therefore, it will be my actions again, which will also be the counter action to this. Dushkarma should be countered with punya karma. Papa karma should be countered with punya karma. Of course, there we also believe in the grace of God. So if we sincerely pray to God, every time God will come to our aid, there is absolutely no doubt about it. But, there is a but. What is the but? Prayer, sincere prayers to God would never go unanswered. But God, in His infinite wisdom, knows how to answer our prayers, when, where, in which form. Because He sees our whole future. We only see immediately. I'll give narrative incident. Maybe I think I did it last year, but still. There was a devotee, it's a real incident in Calcutta. He had a daughter to be married. So he heard of a boy, eligible boy, in a village, which is about 7-8 hours bus drive. And he fixed an appointment with them. Have you heard this? So he went one morning, he got up into the bus, whole day the bus will take to reach that village. And then he reached that village. He was expecting his future son-in-law's people to come and receive him. It was a small village. Nobody came. Along with him, another passenger was there. Many passengers were there in that. So they got up. Meanwhile, you know, they were talking. We became friends in the bus. They were talking, they got down, and the person was looking here and there, and the passenger understood. What for are you looking? Said, this is the situation, somebody was supposed to come. He said, there is no such person in this village. Then he discovered that there were in fact two villages, exactly of the same name, and opposite ends. He entered into the bus, which took him to the supposedly wrong village. What can you do? It's night time. So the man said, there is no, this bus only will go to Calcutta next morning. Please come to my house. Took him to his house. And he had a son, young man. And this man liked that boy very much. And they had a nice talk. And it was fixed that man will come and visit his daughter. And actually it so happened that they liked each other so much, very soon marriage had taken place. Now, did he enter into the wrong bus? Or right bus? It was meant to be. Thakur, because they were devotees, he prayed to Thakur sincerely, and he entered into the bus. Thakur had taken him to the
right
village. He did not know. He thought that he by mistake, it was God doesn't make a mistake. He thought he made a mistake. So God's, we all believe in God's grace. Holy Mother also said, if your prarabdha is such that a plowshare was to go through you, if God's grace is there, a pin prick, just to, you know, say, yes, I also suffered like that. But it can happen. So God will always answer. But only we should not say that you have to give answer the way I want it, right now, right here. No. He leave it to him. Prayer is your ane, and answer is his ane. How do you translate ane? Swearing?
Swearing.
Or it is a, what we call?
Covenant.
It's a covenant. It's my responsibility to pray to you. It is your burden to answer. Otherwise, you will go to? Yes. So, prayer it is. This law of karma is very good. It is not a negative thing. It is a wonderful thing. The purpose of law of karma is Prakriti is taking us to God through right and wrong, difficulties and have pleasure and pain, etc. Ultimately, it is all taking us to God only. So that is Ante. Now, there are 2 points we have to understand. Stop finding fault. Worry is one of the things that's because we start finding fault. Instead of finding fault in ourselves, we start finding fault in others. My boss is bad person, or he is favoring somebody, or something is happening. No. All faults ultimately are our own faults. And the most important point, we already discussed, but in a slightly different way. Never ever compare yourselves with others' good fortunes. Always compare yourself with others' misfortunes. Compared to others' misfortunes, our misfortunes look like that we are in heaven. But we always do the opposite. That is not a good thing. These are the few points I wanted to bring. How to stop worrying and start living. To summarize, what is the, to stop any worry, first of all we have to know that it is a negative mental reaction. The event being the same, how to look upon it in a positive and helpful light. That is called optimistic but realistic attitude on life. Second, what we have to know is that we are all invariably going to God, and these are all stepping stones. A saint also will have the same events, but he will use it in a positive way. Sri Ramakrishna used to say, suppose there is a family, and then there are 2 brothers. A younger brother wants to progress towards God. Perhaps the elder brother takes all responsibility of looking after the family. Perhaps there is enough money, income, for them not to worry. So all these factors are wonderful factors. Then the younger man need not worry at all about these things. But in any case, life is all about growth. Expansion is life. Who said that? Expansion means what? Yeah. But you know, most of us, what we understand by expansion, after this vertical growth stops, the horizontal growth is expansion in life. That's not what is meant. Expansion means we grow in how many things? Goodness,
wisdom,
happiness. That is real expansion. That is what we have to think. So as I said, let us have some definite goals we look forward. If we pay more attention to what we ought to do to achieve them, we have that much less to worry about. And I also said, even events which lead us to worry, even leading to failures, do not prove our worthiness or unworthiness. Only they prove, they are opportunities for us to grow over. Failures are the what is it said? Steps to success. This is absolute truth, wonderful truth. And the other truth also we know, an ideal brain is a devil's workshop. And if we don't engage ourselves in positive activities, what do? We go on brooding, thinking negative things, which doesn't do any good. And it does worse, it poisons our life. So these are some of the points which I thought our devotees must learn. And satsanga. So Sri Ramakrishna says satsanga. Now I will connect it very briefly. What is satsanga from this topic's point of view? Cultivate the company of those people who will take away your worries. There was a woman, poor woman. She had lot of worries. So she put up an advertisement, anybody who could take away my worries, I'll pay for that person $5,000 a month. So one young man applied and rushed to her apartment. And he saw it was a very poor house. She didn't look like that she had even $100 to pay. So he asked her, how are you going to pay me $5,000 taking away your worries? She said, that is your first worry. You should find out how to take. So worries are good. They do not prove our worthiness or unworthiness. They can be used as stepping stones to success. But keep company of those people who are always cheerful. You know, in the company of cheerful people, you cannot go on keeping your gloomy face for a long time. And in fact, Swami Vivekananda said that if you get up any morning with a gloomy face, don't come out of your room. Lock all the doors and windows. The world is full of, you know, gloominess. Don't come and add one more. So, satsang helps a lot in every way. Then what was his other commandment? Now and then go to? Then what do you need? So you have to think all these points we raised and said. Everybody is having their own problems. And all problems are meant for me to grow. And let God help me. Pray to God. That's what you will have to do. Then what is the other discrimination? Discrimination means compare other people's misfortunes and say, even they are suffering so much in comparison with them, my problems are far, far better. Would you like to be there in the shoes of, you know, under Mugabe? Would you like to be under Mugabe's kingdom? So that is discrimination. Finally, live like maid servant. What the maid servant? How does the maid servant live? It's completely detached. What does it mean in this context? In this context is, let the others worry. In Calcutta, you know, there was one person. There were two friends. And one of them had borrowed some money from the other, promising that he will pay after 15 days. He got the money, 15 days passed. 15th day was next day. This fellow started one at 11 o'clock, restlessly moving about. His friend asked him, why are you not sleeping? He said, I am worried. What are you worried about? You know, I borrowed money, tomorrow I have to repay. Said, stupid fellow, it is not for you to worry, it is for the other fellow to worry. Where from he is going to No. God is there, He will help us. If we live correct life, He will help us. A dharmic life is the ultimate remedy for all worries. Do you believe in it? Mm-hmm. If you lead a punya life, do dharmic life, what would be the result? Only, you know, there will be some existential problems, but karmic problems will not be there. because your karma is very, very good. This is one remedy. Of course, if you look upon every event as an opportunity to go towards God, the good and the bad both are welcome. This is how we have to develop first a dharmic outlook, then a spiritual outlook. This is the only way to overcome worries. There may be other short-term remedies, like, you know, you borrow some money and you borrow some from some other place to pay that one, and borrow from some other place to pay for that one. That's not ultimately a remedy at all. So think over these few items. Tomorrow we will summarize our 11th chapter. Actually, I have already dealt with the most important points, but there are a few points, both to recollect what we had spoken and also certain points which need to be thought about, and we will wrap up the subject. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.